And welcome back to Coast, Danyon Brinkley with us. We will take your phone calls for vets, or if you are a vet and you have a specific question, check in with us as well. We will be right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Danyon Brinkley with us. And of course, we'll take your calls this hour. Next hour, we're going to talk about Danyon's incredible work, Saved by the Light, and some of his prophecy. Danyon, as we look forward in terms of vets, is it going to get any better? Regardless of the work that you do and Joyce Riley does and so many other people, are we going to be able to fix some of these problems?
Absolutely, George. It's doing shows like this. It's where we step up to the plate. We do our homework. We plan it all year. I mean, you and Tommy, we work on it all year. We plan it. We put the information up. We put it on a website that we link back and forth so that we are doing our part. There are so many organizations out there, George, just doing the greatest work, but they're unsung. We only talk about them one day. We don't put them up. We don't have a place that people go to them. That's why we built the Twilight Brigade website, and it's slow, but it's going to be a portal where people can come and look. You know, I know an awful lot about how the system works because I live in it every day. But I live in it in such a way that it becomes really important that we win. That how, like Churchill said, how a nation treats its veterans determines the glory or the sanctity of that nation. And if we look at where America is and all the stuff that people are talking about, and we look at those people who are fighting to defend that place and how we treat them, what's happened to us, America? And if we, as people who live in the night, that was a great Glenn Fry song that Tom was playing in the bumper music, but if we who live in the night make a difference, you know, I'll put the stuff up, and then you go to it, and you just call. You let it be known, and let the congressmen and senators know what our issues are, and that we are informed. This is what means we'll win. We are 22 million people, another 2 million on active duty, and we are the people who stood up for whether you were a reservist or
active duty,
or ever what you were, ever what you did that you served, then you have a voice that stands out, that you can speak your mind, and you can look at these issues. And by the way, George, you left out the Merchant Marine song.
Oh, yeah. All right, you know what? A few years ago, I left out the Coast Guard song, so I got to tell Danny we got to get another one.
But the Merchant Marines, because look at the Lend-Lease program. Look at when World War II was, and look at Nam transporting all that stuff. I mean, those are the Merchant Marines running those ships into the Philippines and into Cameron Bay, and in World War II, all over the Lend-Lease program when we were supporting the British. And I was just laughing because, unlike you, George, I cherish and listen to those songs.
It just shivers when you hear them.
Yeah, I mean, and to be a part of it, and I just listen to them, and I have such pride. So I've got a conspiracy question for you.
All right.
When I was looking at, you know, because I'm always wandering through information with my obsessive compulsive personality, almost 200 colonels, lieutenant colonels, and generals have been dismissed from their positions. Okay? And that kind of number hasn't happened since World War II, when guys were mustering out who were in for the duration. Then we see these little clips about these two admirals that are caught in an espionage ring, okay, in the Philippines. But even if I was considering that, the elimination of this many upper-level 20-yearers who don't want to come out, what could be the question or what could be the system of events that allowed them not to just retire but to be forced in retirement?
Let's say one of several things. One, though I don't think it's this, but it's a possibility, they're trying to save money, so they're lopping people off from the top and they won't replace them. Possible, but I don't think so. I think there's something else going on. I think these military folks are concerned about something, and they are very vocal about something, and they had to get rid of them. What do you think?
Okay, I heard two things. Number one, that the grand conspiracy moves through so many places because of the NSA listening in and seeing possible and how it's connected, how long they served in their divisions, or they were The other thing was that they were given a choice about whether they would follow the Constitution and not fire on Americans, or if they would follow the orders of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and fire on Americans. I don't know which one, but I hear
you might be close.
I hear guys who served 20 years and who are lying in beds who understand how it works. You know, when you're 78 years old and you spent your whole life in the military and you came out with a subcontractor, you understand how the network works, and then you can look at what you see on the news and look at it and piece it together. I have a rare privilege of listening to these people talk, George. So I wanted to run that by you, because here comes a possibility of a purge that's bigger than we've had since World War II. And the scuttle, there's two or three different scuttlebutts of it, but it's all coming from within those people who are still active in that, and it's theorized by those people who spent 20 to 40 years in it. So it's interesting for everybody to watch that piece of information, so it may help tell us where we are and how we make the right decisions and what we believe is coming, like you were talking earlier with Nick.
Yeah.
I mean, the water has to be warming. I mean, George, it has to be warming, because Sandy never hit hurricane status except for about 45 minutes, and then that storm went 1,100 miles and tore everything to hell. So the Nick's idea of solar flare activity and the warming of the water tells a story, and how I believe that's true. I was talking to a friend of mine in South Carolina, and all the oysters, because I go every year to Oyster Roast, because it's a big southern thing, Oyster Roast. I go every year. There are in three places where the biggest oyster beds, there are no living oysters.
Jeez.
In the place where I grew
all
up,
right,
there's no living oysters.
Save that for your prophecy when we get into that.
I got
something's
it.
Going on. Let's go to the phones. Daniel's in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Welcome to the program, Daniel. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you. First of all, thank you. Thank you for your service. I'm a veteran myself. I served 13 years in the Army, and I've got to say, what your guest is saying about the problems that us veterans are facing is spot on. I mean,
thank you.
PTSD. I mean, I was active duty, then I went to the National Guard, and here in Oklahoma, we had a guardsman who recently just off himself. Everything was fine, everything was great, and then just for some reason he snapped.
Oh.
It's post-traumatic stress disorder, George,
and they're
drugging guys on active duty. They're giving them antidepressants and while they're on active duty, and clearly on the bottle it says, do not give this to a person that's under like 24 and who is in a stressful situation. And it says it on the bottle, and they're giving it to them.
Was it this bad with the soldiers coming back from Vietnam?
A little worse, because there was what happens now is there's a complete disconnect. Where my guy who was just talking, there's a complete disconnect between those people who serve in the military, other than the family members, than after World War II. But in Vietnam, there was a agitation. There was a vendetta against the Vietnam veteran. Why do you think 8,000 of them at 22 kill themselves every day? It used to be 55 and older. Now there have so many 22 to 30-year-olds, the numbers are starting to change. So it was different. The Vietnam veteran had to endure a lot more disassociative and reactions than those who are dealing with it now. But they say it's like this, George. A combat guy who did two tours in Afghanistan and Iraq, that's a freaked out, dehydrated situation. And most of the people on the ground are the ones who are suffering the most. Most college-educated people tend to come out of it a little better. But most of those people who are going through that don't have a way to readjust based on what they've seen that combat does. And I just appreciate the guy knowing that the George Norrie Daniel Brinkley annual report and what our veterans need was accurate from someone out there listening. That makes me proud, George.
So important. Ryan is in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Bless you,
Ryan. First-time caller. Hello, Ryan. Go ahead.
Hey, I'm just wanted to call in and see if you had any advice on my father who has hearing loss. I mean, he's pretty, you know, about 80% disabled, but the thing that's causing him the most problems right now is the fact that he can't communicate with any of us. And the bigger issue is that he can't even get into the VA for months because apparently there's such a backlog. And
I can handle that, Ryan. Listen, number one, what branch of the service did your father serve in?
He was a Marine, and then he served in the Army and was a recruiter for a number of years.
Jesus Christ, that's a lifer. Okay,
yeah.
Tell him, bless him. So, number one, here's what's happening. The VAs are so overwhelmed because 41% of all claims at the VA is hearing loss. What they do is they can't have enough audiologists because they're hiring social workers to deal with homeless, because that's the 2015 mantra of the present administration, to end homeless. Okay, so they have to take monies from everything else, so audiology suffers in that. So what I did with Veterans Care Plus is we have a program called MyHearingCenters.com. Because if a veteran, Ryan, can hear, he cannot communicate. If he has a little age on him, it gets a little worse, and then the needs can't be met because, you know, it progresses. People who served in Vietnam are having hearing loss. So if you go to Sovereignty, if you go to a Veterans Care Plus, which is on Danyon, there's the company that creates the opportunity, and they're such a good company, Ryan. They're all over the West, but they're such a good company that the VA has hired them out to do hearing tests for veterans in my own VISN, VISN 22, Las Vegas to Los Angeles.
All right, Ryan, and definitely get a hold of Danyon and send him an email. They can get through you through the TwilightBrigade.com.
Absolutely, and I'll help in any way.
Great. Speaking of the Twilight Brigade, let's bring in Sean Murphy. Sean, of course, a Notre Dame graduate. He went through the Twilight Brigade training in Denver. He is now a technical consultant to the organization. And let's bring him in for a moment. Sean, thanks for serving there. I appreciate it. How are you?
I'm doing well tonight, George. And thank you for doing this. Listening to you and Danyon talk about these, it just brings it home to me why I am a Twilight Brigader and all the things that I've learned and been inspired to do this work.
Octavius. Well,
let me tell you something, Sean. You're quite a guy to do what you do, to volunteer, to be at the bedside. What is it like for you? What when you go home after one of these outings, what's it like?
It's powerful, George, and it's really inspiring. And I think the biggest thing that I've gotten from this, aside from all the lessons and things I've learned from Danyon and just doing the work, but for veterans and on Veterans Day, it's truly been the stories, George. I mean, I've heard the most amazing stories from Tuskegee Airmen, Pearl Harbor. I feel like I've stormed the beaches of Iwo Jima and landed in Normandy. It's hard to really explain what it's like to not read or hear about history, but to truly be present with those who have lived it and the American heroes. I mean, that's what always sticks with me, from the great stories all the way down to ones that people have never heard or thought of, but they're all so meaningful to be a part of history and to hear them, I would say.
Sean, would you share with us perhaps one story that has stuck with you since you've been doing this?
Sure. There's a great one, and Danyon can appreciate this one because he was there too, but I think it really speaks to both the Twilight Brigade and Danyon and this work. And it was a World War II veteran named Dennis, and this was in Los Angeles. And I remember Dennis had been he'd been troubled because he couldn't figure out why he was in the situation he was. He had a few weeks left. He was on a morphine diet and had never smoked or drank or done anything wrong. And he couldn't figure out how he ended up in this predicament. And Danyon comes in, and we all know how Danyon talks in his smooth Southern gentleman way, said, "Dennis, you're here because you were a welder. And you got nickel in your throat, and that's how you got throat cancer." And Dennis had never even considered that it was his welding in the military that had led to throat cancer. And I saw it I saw it completely change him. And I don't know where this came from Danyon. I'm still trying to figure out how he does all of this psychic stuff. It kind of blows my Notre Dame intellectual mind sometimes. But I saw it change everything for Dennis. Within a few days, he passed with peace. He got a phone call from his daughter, who lived, I think, in South Carolina, too. And it was that seeing everything change from getting some insight from Danyon and helping him find peace in his life. And those stories happen a lot, George, but this one in particular I thought was great because Danyon was there, and it was a little bit of that unknown. None of us knew that he was a welder, but all of a sudden Danyon said that, and it all connected for Dennis.
That's a great story. Sean, I want to thank you. You keep doing the great things you do, my friend. The gates of heaven are open.
Thank you very much, George. And you too, and thanks for doing this. I know it's one night a year, but for 15 years, come on, it's really great, and it's inspiring for people my age.
Well, wish we could do something for your Notre Dame football team there, Sean. Huh?
Prayer.
Live.
Prayer.
Oh, George.
George, prayer. Never.
You got it. Take care, Sean. All right.
Funny, well, those
Notre Damers love that football team, don't they, Danyon?
Oh, God, they go crazy. I listen to it. You know, they hang by it. You know, and having Sean, let me tell you something. That Sean came along trying to – he had a priest professor who passed today. And Sean came along, and this priest, he was looking at near-death experiences. And this priest told him to follow that part of his dream, and he began to look, and he found the Twilight Brigade. And being as smart as he is in his well religious philosophy and religion, he started looking to find those answers. And just listening to him, George, makes me proud, because there's 6,000. There's 6,000 members of this family. And they care about each other, and they're impressed by each other, and they support each other. And I think that's another – that's why we call it the Twilight Brigade.
I love it, Danyon. Let's go to John in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I think we have – no, we're not going to have time. Let's wait. I'll get John after the break, Danyon. But do give out your website one more time, would you, Mr. Brinkley?
Yes, just Danyon.com and thetwilightbrigade.com. And help Twilight Brigade. Any of those three, just punch up to Twilight Brigade, put help Twilight Brigade, twilightbrigade.com, or Danyon.com. It all goes to the same place.
I'm now convinced, Danyon, there's got to be some synergy here. When we talk next hour about you being saved by the light and how you have gone through several near-death experiences, I now know why you were saved, to do this.
Yeah, isn't it terrible?
Not at all. Not at all. It's amazing, isn't it? What else would you be doing if you weren't doing this?
You know what, George? When I look back, what we're going to talk about next, when I look back over the 38 years, there's some things that makes me really proud. I mean, I got up from the dead and saw that nobody ever really dies, you know, and right now is as dead as anybody's ever going to get.
Well, I tell you what, I look forward to talking with you about that, too. We're going to come back in a moment. We will take final phone calls on this, our Veterans Day salute, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Danyon Brinkley with us. He's with us for the full show next hour. We will talk about his work and what has happened to him since he almost died. And here he is. Gosh, I'm sure glad, Danyon, you're still with us, huh? Always good to have you with us.
I'm still, you know what I'm so happy about, George? I'm happy about the show and that people recognize that you're reaching out and that there comes that time if we should do this twice a year. I mean, let me tell you something, that I'm a big alternative and complementary guy looking at this end-of-life care and looking at what veterans need. You cannot drug someone to health. You have to find that. Now think of how crazy this is. You know the big hemp rage. Everybody wants to smoke pot. But industrial hemp, which is doesn't have any THC in it, you know, it has 30. We are the number one importers of industrial hemp in the world, in China, Romania, Mexico. That's not getting high, but making products. So this company came along called Hemp Inc., and they were talking to me, and they produced this study that if you mix 60% hemp as a fabric and I think 15% rayon and two or three other products as a bed sheet and as scrubs, it will kill staph infection, which is now becoming, it's morphing itself into MERS, MRSA, and that means it's an antibiotic resistant. Now, by taking our time and looking at stuff like that, and this company came and I started doing the research, the Chinese are already doing it. All the socks worn by the Chinese are made by hemp for athlete's foot, for all those things that we who've ever wore boots for long periods of time ever always had to deal with. And I think that's some pretty wondrous stuff that this kind of information is getting out.
I think so, too. Okay, let's go to the phones. This last half hour is going to fly by. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. John's with us. John, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
George, thanks for taking my call. Yes, first of all, I'm a World War II Marine combat veteran. Ooh. Of the Iwo Jima campaign. And I was just thinking, after I returned from the World War II, what happened to some of the veterans that were suffering from mental disorders, sort of. We used to refer to it as combat fatigue. So becoming active in the American Legion, I noticed that some of our veterans, first of all, were being sent to mental institutions, those that were severely injured mentally during the different areas of the war. And then after that, years and years later, after they closed most of these mental institutions, then they were put in like a group home until they either, and were supervised until they either passed away. So that's the difference in what we suffered then. And of course, probably my biggest story was that on Iwo, our sergeant smothered a grenade, and we had a small squad of five men. And after that occurrence happened, two of the men in the the following morning, I could see him shaking and crying, and so they were evacuated, and I guess they were suffering sort of a combat fatigue syndrome. And after the battle was over, I tried to get an award for the sergeant that committed this act of heroism. And when I went before the awards board aboard ship, since I was the only surviving eyewitness, I couldn't put him up for a citation because they wouldn't accept a single eyewitness to his act. So for 69 years now, I've been trying to get at least a Bronze Star for this sergeant. And within the last 2 years, I finally submitted all the paperwork necessary to the Marine Corps, to the awards board at Washington, D.C. And maybe if I'm fortunate enough, before the end of the year or early next year, I might, for his surviving siblings, that with which there are two now, all in their, both in their 90s, that I might be able to accomplish that service.
Okay, let me ask
like
a question.
Like Mr. Brinkley, I've been very fortunate, and I've always served through the service officer's capacity and trying to do as much as I could for the veterans over last, well, you might say 60 years.
Thank you, John. Thank you for everything you've done for our country. Go ahead, Daniel.
Okay, what I wanted to ask John is this. Who is this guy? Where is this paperwork? And where? What state he's in? Because if he could come to me at the Twilight Brigade, it's just Daniel@thetwilightbrigade.com, and he gives me this information, I can help. I mean, do you hear heroism when you listen to him, George? He's the only survivor. He's the only survivor, and he's trying to honor his the head of that platoon, the person that was in command and control who took that hand grenade for him. It's like saving Private Ryan. When you look at it, and that's a real story we just heard. I'll help him. I'll terrorize him. I can't say that. I will be diligent in helping him see that this hero, this Marine of Iwo Jima, gets his recognition.
All right. You just make sure, John, if you're not using a computer, somebody gets to Danian with this information. If you are using a computer, you got some work to do tomorrow. Let's go to Danian.com. Donna in Dothan, Alabama. Hello, Donna. Welcome to the program.
Hello, George. Hi. And hello, Daniel.
Hey, Donna.
God bless both of you for your service and your continuing this wonderful work. The reason I called was I had lost the Twilight Brigade's website name last year when, within a span of 7 months, I lost both my husband, Specialist Fourth James Robert Penny II,
bless him,
to cancer, and I was at his bedside because I knew that was important, that someone be there to let them know. 7 months later, my father, 87-year-old Noel E. Walters, who was in the Navy as a motorman third in the Russell Islands during World War II, and I was there when he passed.
Thank you.
And you're right. You are right. They deserve, all of us, to be there in spirit, if not in person. And through watching them pass, I have learned so much. And now I will never lose your website name again. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna. Appreciate it.
And you see, George, in Alabama, we have a strong contingent because it works well in the South because they're caregivers. You know, I mean, we have a strong contingent, but just listening to her and what she's going through, and this is something that's happening to so many wee baby boomers. It's like you said, your father, you know, and these are the greatest generation. And people don't realize what, just like with last year when Tommy and his lovely companion, fiance, Raquel, when they came to the VA to visit, some of the people that they visited never got a visitor on Christmas, has never had one, and they've been there 5 years. So the only visitor they had all year long was your producer and his fiance.
I know. They love doing that, too, Daniel.
Well, everybody would love it if they just would try it and learn how to deal with those things and come, because you just grow and you strengthen yourself so much, George. And you're doing something of true, absolute spiritual service. Think about it. I mean, you're dealing with something that you're going to deal with, and you're dealing with it in such a way that as you're giving, you're receiving a sense of comfort, a sense of security, and a sense of understanding about it, because everybody doesn't need a near-death experience to become smart, caring, compassionate, and in service to make America a better place.
Let's go to Jim, truck driving in North Carolina, first-time caller. Jim, we salute you for driving a truck, and maybe if you were in the service. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm definitely a Vietnam veteran. Danny and George, I appreciate so much what you guys do for us. I have a couple of comments. One, the PTSD and the prescription drug. I don't know that a lot of people understand Vietnam veterans. You know, when we came back, we didn't have what they have now. You know, if as an 18-year-old, you know, we got to see things that people, they can't even imagine, you know. But when we came back, we were pretty much told to suck it up. You know, we weren't told to go talk to somebody about it. We were told to suck it up, you know. So there's a lot of us that it took me probably 3 years before I could sleep at night. But, you know, that's the past. And I'm glad that the guys that are coming back now, at least they're giving these guys some help. As far as the prescription drug, I went to the VA for a back problem. And the first thing they did, they gave me a six-month down-the-road appointment, and then they prescribed me Vicodin and Percocet.
Jesus.
And you know, they had no problem at all prescribing that, and I just think that's terrible.
Yeah, because people become junkies instantly, and then, like the Wall Street Journal, drugs are the demon with PTSD. You cannot drug someone to safety. And I'm thanking you again for bringing it up, because the way that the VA is in trouble with JACO, because they're writing too many prescriptions. The average 62-year-old veteran has 21 scripts.
21?
That's 21. Listen, the average 22-year-old has 11. And most of that turns into the black market, or it turns into addiction, or it, you know, when you look at OxyContin, but the whole point, and this is when I'll go back again, George, he's exactly right. Because all of a sudden, that becomes easier to get. It's easier to get addicted. It's easier to lose focus. You know, and this is thing like alcohol percent, 38% of all veterans are heavy drinkers. And active duty personnel are heavy drinkers. We are not training our people how to look at combat, which is should be outlawed. We're not training our people, are we supporting them enough? Are we supporting them enough to be able to integrate? And like this World War II guy that we were just talking to, when they put those people in mental institutions because they couldn't cope, they didn't have as advanced as antidepressants. They had shock therapy. Look at the evolution in the last 40 years of the types of drugs that exist.
Oh, out of control.
And then you look at having Bach bottles of 800 in it, and they're being penalized. So at least the VA is taking action. You know, there's some good things, George, that we should be really proud of and have gratitude. But the things that we're always talking about are the things that people need to care about and be concerned about, because they can go to the site and they can look at this stuff and they can make a difference. You know, you can donate, you can come to the call of action, you can call, you can pick out some subject of the ones that we talked about tonight, and you can focus on that to help serve a veteran get the kind of help that they need. PTSD, abuse, hunger, homelessness, suicides, and jobs. Not hard.
Let me ask you something with regards to the VA hospitals. Why did we need them? Why didn't the government just pay for going into traditional medical facilities, non-VA?
Well, for two reasons. A veteran is a completely different animal than a civilian. They have seen more things and endured and gone through more stuff, especially those who came out, okay, because it all started with the soldiers' homes. What Lincoln decided to do was he needed to heal a nation. He did some really smart things. I'm not a big Lincoln fan, but he did some really smart things. He created the soldiers' homes. And what he did was he wanted to put wounded soldiers of both the North and the South in one place so that as they were healing from the wounds, they got to know each other. And he saw this as a method to heal a nation. There were five basic core places that it kept growing. And then Hoover came in and he saw like the WPA and all the work of what was going on. It wasn't quite the WPA before Roosevelt, but he saw the need. He saw the need for these kind of facilities because of what our gentleman was talking about from World War II, and that they had to be segregated. And the United States demanded that our veterans of World War II be served and taken care of in a bunch of programs and educating them. It brought them back, and they gave birth to us, George. And they built the greatest industrialized nation in the history of the entire world. And so it was like demanded. They were special. They were elite. And they needed unique kinds of services and treatment. It's amazing that we're still doing to these PTSD veterans the same thing as what he called battle fatigue or shell shock. It only got the term PTSD in Vietnam, but it's still the same thing. The Civil War had it. A lot of people cannot adjust to war. So it was a necessity that came out of the Civil War that grew into a government agency.
All right, let's go to Kyle in Portland, Oregon. Kyle, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hey, no problem. Hey, first of all, thanks to both of you guys for doing this show tonight. I think
you're welcome,
the only
Kyle.
News media that's done anything other than maybe Good Morning America today for veterans, which is kind of sad. But one thing I think that doesn't really get touched on a whole lot these days and that needs to be, I think, addressed is the negative stigma of PTSD needs to be removed completely. I feel like every time someone brings up PTSD, there's a lot of people have a negative view on that, such as, oh, you know, a veteran with PTSD has, you know, violent tendencies, or, you know, he's going to do this or going to do that. And it's never anything negative. And, you know, you guys obviously know PTSD is just, you know, it's a side effect from what, you know, veterans deal with, but it's not a bad thing. So I think more education out there, we need more education to people, you know, to teach them that it's not a bad thing that guys with PTSD are normal people. They're not violent. They're not angry. They're just, they've got something that's going on that needs to be addressed. You know what I mean?
I support you 100%.
So, yeah, it's like my dad, you know, for instance, he, Vietnam veteran, he has PTSD, and he is not even remotely violent. So, I don't know, just something to think about, I guess. And
thank you, Carl.
More talking to people.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, but you know, Carl, thank you, because look, PTSD is what comes under, a lot of times it's come from heavy stress, lack of hydration and stress. It was like in Vietnam, because you didn't know who your enemy was, what you called your base of operations. There was no rear echelon. What your base of operations was a hole cut in the ground with tin and dirt piled on it that the bees came in and put up. And so you were always what was called hypervigilant. It changes the molecular or the genetic chemical reactions in the brain. Hypervigilance creates a mindset. And once that goes away, because you never realize that you're freaked out and you can't sleep and you have one eye open and you have your weapon in your hand, and then you come home and you're supposed to just forget that. I agree with you, Carl. The people have to look at it from a point that most veterans are supposed to suck it up and go, and then it becomes a stigma on their record. And now if they have any kind of mental problems, they can't own a weapon. And if you take any kind of antidepressants, then there's something wrong with you. So they're staying away, but it's creating abuse and hunger and homelessness and suicides. And then it creates the nature that they can't be employed because it has the stigma that you just described on it.
We're almost out of time, Daniel. I want to thank you so much for this episode of the Veterans Day celebration. We're going to come back with you in just a moment as we talk about why you're still alive. Daniel Brinkley with us right here on Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us.